Hi, this is Bob.
Welcome to Shattered Lives, a lively, educational, and issues-driven radio show designed to tell another side of the story, to focus on and humanize crime victims, to enlighten and shine the spotlight on organizations and service providers, and to assist those who walk the path with us. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice, your host and co-host, Delilah Jones, president of Imagine Publicity.com, joining you this evening and every Saturday evening for enlightenment, education, and entertainment surrounding primarily crime victim issues. And tonight is no different. So I'd like to say good evening to everyone in my national audience. It's always a pleasure to have you with us, and hopefully we have new listeners this evening. That's always such a good thing to have. And so before I bring in my able co-host and co-pilot, just want to make a couple of brief announcements, and then we will get to our guests. Just want to remind everyone that I have a unique service, customized victim impact writing service available for crime victims who are going through the sentencing phase of their trial or a Board of Pardons and Parole hearing. If you're interested in getting some help with that, please do contact me or Delilah, and we can set you up with information, because that can be a real chore and something I might be able to help you with. The second thing I want to mention, and something we're very proud of, Delilah and I have been doing this very diverse show every single Saturday for 2 years as of Monday, February 10th. And to celebrate that benchmark, we are doing a very special two-hour radio show. And it's going to be different because this time we will have call-in people asking questions regarding crime, maybe calling in to tell a story if they've been a guest, or just to call in to say hi or congratulate us. Will Marling, Executive Director of the National Organization for Victim Assistance, and Tim Pombach, the very famous and learned forensic scientist, professor, and law enforcement person from the Henry Lee Forensic Institute, will be our two-hour co-hosts. So we're very excited about that, to have that. And if you'd like to sign up for the event, you can go on the Facebook page that we have specially for that, or just send me an email. Okay? So let me just say, welcome, Delilah. Good evening, and how are you?
Hi, Donna. I'm doing fine. I'm not going to take up any more time because I think we have such an information-packed show for the listeners today. You know, being that it's Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month, our guests are just sitting here waiting to go. And I think let's bring them on and get started with this show, because the information is way too important for me to chit-chat.
Okay. Well, definitely, definitely. I agree. I'm just gonna basically give their names and titles, and they can do more, because they are the most appropriate people to talk about their credentials in the context of our topic this evening. So, Melissa Siegel is the chair for the National Youth Advisory Board for Love is Respect, and that is observed in a special week, and I believe it encompasses this week or the beginning of next week, which is part of the overall National Teen Dating Awareness Month, okay? And then two colleagues that she has with her are Juliana Luzzano, who is a survivor of domestic violence as a teen, and she's going to share her story as well as other information. And we have Jamika Anderson, who is the founder and director of a special nonprofit called I Am Not the Media, as well as working for a special librarian for specialized student resources, and I'll let her tell you about that. So, ladies, all three of you, thank you so much for being with us on Shattered Lives. It's a real pleasure to have you and to talk about this important topic.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, it's our pleasure. As Delilah said, we don't want to waste any time with this. And Melissa, you and I were talking off air with regard to, you know, just the appropriate way to start. And I think I totally agree with you. Many times teen issues are kind of swept under the rug because, oh, they're just teens. And, you know, some of those, you know, it's a family matter or it's handled at school or whatever. And I think we need to let our audience know, many of which are adults who may have teenagers themselves, why is this such an important topic in terms of teen dating violence? I think everyone I know of somebody that may be in this situation. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. It is a very big issue. We see in the numbers purely, we see 1 in 3 young people are experiencing teen dating violence across the nation. So in an average classroom of 30, that's 10 young people. And we know that the age group 16 to 24 is the most at risk for experiencing abuse in their relationships at 3 times the national average. And I think also it's just, we really see that young people are exposed to in the media and all around them to unhealthy and abusive relationships. And so I think really giving young people the opportunity to talk about healthy relationships and really learn about that is really important.
Mm-hmm. How long has there been a concerted national effort in terms of this National Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month? Has it been for just a few years or what?
I mean, I think different people have been doing it for different amounts of time. I know that in 2010, Congress actually declared February Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month, and I think that was the first time where there was a really big national push. And so since then, it has just increased exponentially into where we are today.
I see. Okay. And so you've had over 3 years to kind of get your legs under you in terms of this issue. And can you give us an idea about how do you differentiate and what are the activities around Respect Week versus National Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month? They seem to dovetail, but are there very different focuses and, you know, different activities depending upon which week of the month it is or whatnot?
Yeah, so throughout the month, we're encouraging everyone to raise awareness about teen dating violence, and not just in February, but also throughout the year. But this month in particular, we're really trying to get people to raise awareness. But on a national level, they've really dedicated next week, the 10th through the 14th, as Respect Week. And so that is really the week where there's a lot of really important events happening. And one of the big ones is that we're asking people to wear orange this upcoming Tuesday, the 11th. So you can wear, you know, all orange. You can wear just an orange shirt or an orange tie or orange earrings, just something to show that you're raising awareness about this issue. And not just wear it, but really go out and talk about it. And then there's also on Friday, which is Valentine's Day, there's also the National Respect Announcement, where we're asking for young people to share information about teen dating violence and healthy relationships in their schools or clubs or youth groups by sharing this announcement. They can also do it online if they sign up for the Thunder class.
Mm-hmm. I see. Well, it sounds like a very organized effort. And like I say, it all begins with just it's about communication and one person talking to another and then them sharing it in different venues. And that's how it's got to make an impact somewhere if you're doing all of these various activities. And I think, I mean, there's so many layers to this issue. But maybe to make it as real as possible. Juliana, I'd like to bring you in. Can you, first of all, thank you very much for joining us, and thank you for having the courage to share your personal story, because I'm sure it's very difficult, but I think you realize the importance, or else you wouldn't be here. You in fact, were a survivor of teen dating violence, is that right?
Yes. I met him when I was 17, and we were together four and a half years.
Okay. And how did it start? I mean, was he like your first boyfriend and you didn't really have a point of reference before that?
Yeah, he was like my first real relationship.
Okay.
I mean, I had dated people previously, but this was like a serious relationship. And so we met through a mutual friend, so that's why I thought, he should be a pretty decent guy since my best friend knows him through somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started dating, and at first it was great. And then, towards the third month, he started getting, verbally abusive. Let's say I didn't answer the thing, he would bad language towards me, and
mm-hmm.
And then it just kind of escalated. Little things. There was red flags from the beginning that I didn't see. Like maybe he didn't like what I had on. He didn't like that I wore makeup or just small things like that. And eventually, it got to the point where he didn't want me even hanging around with my friends because he thought I was spending too much time and was talking to someone else. So
mm-hmm.
that's when the jealousy kind of kicked in,
mm-hmm.
and it started off.
You had no idea in the beginning that he had this type of behavior. It just, suddenly came on, or one thing after another.
It just kind of slowly came on, and
yeah.
At that age, I thought, maybe he's doing this because he loves me. He's just showing that he really cares because I'm not answering the phone. That's why he's
uh-huh.
blowing me up and calling me 20 times.
Oh.
And then also I thought, maybe he doesn't like what I wear or whatever. So it's just basically I thought it was his form of showing that he cares and he truly loves me.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so this went on for how long, Juliana?
This went on for 4.5 years. And we actually have a son together now.
Mm. Well,
and he's one.
Did it escalate into, you said it started with, him being jealous and verbal harassment, and then did it escalate to physical bruises and stalking? And, I mean, did it just get worse and worse?
Yeah, it definitely got worse. I would say around, the third, fourth month, he started getting, he was verbally abusive, and then he would pinch me and, push me and then kind of hold me down sometimes. And then we started dating in February, and, around that summer, I remember one time I snuck out the house to go see him, and I had to be home. I had to get back home before my mom found out.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got mad because he didn't want me to go home. He wanted me to stay with him. So something, it's like he turned into a completely different person, to a monster, and that was the first time he really, really hurt me. He punched me in my head and slapped me, and it was really bad that I was left with bruises and the police was called, but I didn't press charges because at that moment I thought it was my fault that happened because I had to go home. And so after that, it just kind of got worse, and it continued through my pregnancy.
Well, can I ask you, and if this is too personal, that's fine, but I'm just trying to understand in my mind, if this bad behavior was escalating, How did the pregnancy happen? Were you at one point like you forgave, you know, you forgave him, you made up, and so you went back to your normal, you know, intimacy, and then that's how it happened, and then the bad behaviors continued along those same lines?
Yes. Of course, not every moment was bad. We had great times. I loved him. At that point in time, he knew so much about me. We were kind of like best friends, I would say. I thought he was like my best friend because I lost all of my friends pretty much. He was really kind of like my only friend because I really had distanced myself from my family too. And so since he was kind of like all I had, it just continued. Like it would be like bad moments. Like it's like a cycle. So it would be really, really great at one point. We would have a little argument. It would turn really bad, and then just all over again. So we had a break. We had took we broke up for like a month, mm-hmm. and then we got back together, and that's when I got pregnant. So. The reason that I went back
together,
the reason I went back with him was because I felt so lonely because, like I said, he distanced me from my family and friends that I felt lonely and thought he was like the only person there for me, and it just ended up happening.
He isolated you, and through his controlling behavior, that was part of his plan to isolate you so that you couldn't have communication with anybody else?
Yes.
Is that
definitely.
Right?
Definitely. Yes, that's
wow.
right.
Now, how about once the baby was born?
Once the baby was born, things weren't as bad. The physical abuse had stopped, but the verbal abuse was there, especially after having my baby. I felt like self-conscious about my weight. So he, instead of physically hurting me, the verbal abuse got worse because he knew that I felt some type of way about my weight and the changes that my body had went through. So he would call me fat and ugly and tell me that nobody would want me anymore and that mm-hmm. I'm stuck with him and that I'm not going to go anywhere because who's going to want a fat, I'm sorry for the language, but he's like, who would want a fat bitch? And
mm-hmm.
so that he used that verbal
right.
Abuse towards me, so it wasn't as physical.
Mm-hmm. Well, during that time, did you have any kind of a support system that you could reach out to? And did you attempt to connect yourself to any kind of a social service agencies?
Kind of weird talking to somebody that I didn't really know. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I know it sounds funny, but once I had my son, it really opened my eyes. My son gave me my strength because it made me see that he doesn't deserve to grow up seeing that type of behavior. So I did get closer with one of my friends, and
mm-hmm.
There was one, the last time I was with him, he physically abused me in front of my son, and after that day, I never looked back because I realized that my son does not deserve to grow up in that type of environment.
And so that was the pivotal moment where you had the strength to leave, to physically leave?
Yes, that was the moment that I realized that I could no longer do that anymore because I did not deserve to continue living like that or have my son exposed to that.
Now, can you tell us, did you have a plan and did you share with him your plan to leave or did you keep it to yourself?
I did have a plan. He has control over me. Like after he had keyed my face, I wanted to leave.
I'm sorry, you
I
said
felt,
what? He keyed your face?
He keyed my face with my car keys because I wanted to leave. So he got my keys and he keyed my face. So,
with the car keys, he took and slashed your face with the car keys?
Yes. And so I really wanted to leave, but knowing him, I knew that I had to, there was like, I felt like I couldn't escape. So my plan was to remain calm and act like everything was okay. And in the morning, I had to take him to work because he doesn't have a car. He didn't have a car. And so when I took him to work, my plan was to leave and never look back. Well, the apartment was mine in my name, and he didn't have house keys. So the plan was to leave and never, well, leave him and never let him come back to my apartment. And mm-hmm. that's what happened.
And that's what you did. Delilah, does this sound familiar with regard to all of the cases that you and Susan worked on, if not for the age difference? I mean, does it sound just classic?
Well, you know, violence knows no age. No,
right.
There is no justification anywhere. But,
right.
yeah, I mean, there are actual, in my opinion, classic symptoms when you, you know, when I hear a story or I hear someone tell their story, there are classic symptoms and you can see the escalation happening. And I'm just happy to know that you are away from him, and I hope it stays that way because I know it's very easy to fall back into it. You know, I have a question for, you know, Melissa or any of you. What is, you know, where is the area of first response when someone is in a situation like hers? Who do you go to? Is there an agency, an organization, school guidance counselors, churches? What is available for young girls or even young boys to report?
Yeah, I actually work for Mecklenburg County Community Support Services Women's Commission, and we offer services to children who have witnessed abuse as well as teens who, and adults who are experiencing abuse in their relationships. And so if someone wants to come in for crisis counseling or safety planning, we can do a lot of that for them. There's also a lot of ways that people can reach out nationally, and there's a hotline through Love is Respect where young people can either call the hotline, they can text the hotline, or they can chat with them online at loveisrespect.org.
Mm-hmm. And is that hotline a national hotline?
It is.
It is? Okay. Yeah. It's
where did this young lady reach out? How did you get yourself together? How did you get your life together after you made the decision to cut him out of your life? What was your next step?
Well, my next step, really what held me together and helped me get through all this was my faith. My faith helped me through this whole process and really supportive friends, having really, really supportive friends who are there that listened to everything that I had to say, and I never felt like they got tired of listening to the same story over and over. They were very supportive and there with me. They were supportive in telling me to go get a restraining order, and at that time I opened up to my mom, so I had her as a support too. So just having close family members as a support is very, very important.
And did you got the restraining order, and did you file charges? How far did this situation go in through the system, like through the court system?
I actually did not press charges, and I just wanted to leave him and the whole situation behind, and that's what I did. And I haven't.
Do you have a safety plan in place right now as far as,
yeah.
I'm assuming he's still in the same city. Does he have access to your child? You know, where are you with this whole situation right now?
Yeah. Are you in, like, a safe house or?
I moved to a different apartment, and so he doesn't know where I live or where I stay at. And he does see our child, but through his mother. Like, whenever she has him, he goes over there and visits. But I don't want to have any contact with him, so I don't go around him.
Has he tried to approach you or stalk you or threaten you?
He has through text message, but not he hasn't came. I haven't seen him in person.
Well, what can you give us an example of what the text message might say?
He just like it's just mostly like about our son, and he was like, "Oh, if you don't let me see our son, well, I'm gonna do this or that, like that." But I just ignore it. I actually blocked them from texting me. So,
well, I don't know. I think it's very important that you have. It's commendable that you have a support system, but I still think it sounds like you're vulnerable, and maybe you need something more secure, especially since you felt like you opted out of the court system, and that's not always the most effective either, believe me. I don't know. What do you think, Delilah, in terms of, like, document the abuse or something like that, or...
Oh, absolutely. In my opinion, nobody can take too many steps for their safety and for the safety of their children, especially because he's not done.
Right.
He's not done. But that's my opinion. I'm not the expert here. Maybe going to Melissa, what can she do further to ensure her safety, to make sure that he doesn't go through with the threats, obviously, that he's threatening about the child?
Right.
I would actually say I think that Juliana probably knows best in her situation what will work best, and I know that in a lot of cases people don't take steps such as getting restraining orders and things like that because it could put them in potentially more danger in a lot of ways, because if the person that they're with feels like that would kind of encourage them to strike back and get revenge against them. So I think that, I know Juliana on a personal level, and I think that she, knows a lot of the resources in Charlotte and really understands that, you know, she feels like she needs information, that she can definitely access that. And, you know, I encourage all, people, young people and adults who are experiencing abuse to reach out in ways that they feel comfortable, whether that's through a hotline or going to receive counseling services, and really making the decision that's best for them in terms of how far they wish to go with restraining orders or filing charges and that sort of thing.
Right. Well, my concern, and this is not directed at Juliana per se, but they get this false sense of security. Now I'm in a new apartment, or now I'm in a new city, and okay, I didn't need the restraining order, but the relationship is good, so that we could still, but they may use that child as a pawn, and you just don't know. To me, it just sounds too fraught with problems and volatility, and there are some resources that we could offer off air if you're interested, Juliana, something that we recommend to people. But I do have to commend you that you were able to break free, relatively unscathed after that, just deciding that you're going to pick up and go. Many times the perpetrator goes and finds them and abducts the children and, God forbid, murders the woman. So, you are lucky in a lot of respects. But as Delilah said, I don't think he's done. And we, perhaps with the resources that you have there in Charlotte and with what Melissa can offer, we could also just give you as a guideline some other things that you might want to do if you're open to it, okay? Because we just hate not to try to help if we can, But I think that really enlightens our audience in terms of what happens. And this let's bring Jamaica in here. Jamaica, does this, with all of the media aspects and the different people that you interface with, does this sound like a pretty typical scenario? that has been portrayed with other victims or people that you've come across?
Well, not much so. Majority of the youth that I work with,
who do you work with? Tell us.
I work with youth from all backgrounds, but my specific focus is not specifically pertaining to teen dating violence. With my organization, we do address and help teens identify and become conscious to signs of unhealthy relationships, because many teens aren't aware, and it may not be to the magnitude or scope of physical violence, but are not aware of how to become conscious or how to be conscious to signs of controllingness or signs of manipulation and things like that. And they see these unhealthy relationships depicted on an everyday basis in the media through reality TV shows, through music, content and music, and they're not even aware that some of the music that they're singing, some of the lyrics, some of the things that they're seeing depicted on TV shows are depicting unhealthy relationships, so it becomes a norm. And so what I do is I step in and help them identify that this right here is unhealthy. If you're in a situation or you're witnessing a situation or you're in a household and you're seeing a situation like this, this is unhealthy. So I have not really come into counter, because I don't focus on teen dating violence or violent relationships.
Right, you're not a direct service person for that.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
What do you do in terms of trying to get the appropriate media resources and match them for the particular problem? So can you give us an example? You know, you just talked about, well, this is an unhealthy situation. Is there a particular film that you recommend, or a seminar that you set up for teens to see, or a roundtable discussion or a webinar? What is it that you do when you encounter some of these types of problems?
Oh, no, when we go into the workshops, we go into the workshop with the content. We go into the workshops we listen to some of the music that the teens are listening to, in hip-hop and R&B and rock music. We listen to some of the most popular songs that are out in today. And that basically, there's one workshop we have called Love and Lyrics, where we look at some of the songs and what they're depicting as being a relationship and what a relationship looks like, and these songs that these teens are singing, and we analyze the lyrics, and we discuss, do you see any signs in this song of controllingness, and any signs in this song of manipulation and things of that nature, of dependency, and we rate that, and then the teens, we open it up for dialogue for these teens to say, oh, wow, no, that isn't a relationship I would really want to be in. So that's the kind of things that we do, and we actually pull content, a lot of YouTube, we utilize a lot of YouTube content with snippets of some of the reality shows and some of the scenes that are out there. YouTube is utilized heavily for a lot of the content that we pull. And we discuss with the teens some of the things that they're seeing on a regular basis. We talk about some of the reality shows from Jersey Shore and Sam and Ronnie's relationship. And we talk about these things because these teens are witnessing these TV shows on a regular day basis on VH1 and MTV. And we talk about the depiction of the signs of the unhealthiness. And then some of them open up in dialogue and say, you know, yeah, I've been in a situation, or I am in a situation where my boyfriend does, he's very controlling and he tries to choose what friends I hang out with. So we open up that dialogue to make them realize that this is not healthy. Even though this is the norm that you see on a regular basis in the media, this is not healthy. And we talk about what a healthy relationship should look like, what it should feel like. So
mm-hmm. Now, is just so that we understand how they get to this resource, the library you're affiliated with, isn't it like a national group? Now, how do you procure your groups? Do they
you advertise that you're holding a discussion group on these certain things, or are they are they in certain circumstances like mandated by the court to get education? I mean, how do you get your team into these situations?
Okay, our teams, we're booked by different organizations, different groups. So organizations, teams, if there's any team group or team leader, they have a group of teams, they book us. So a lot of in Charlotte, we're booked by a team from churches. We're booked by Boys and Girls Clubs. We're booked by some school programs. Anyone that has teams can book us. So
Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, things like that?
I'm sorry?
Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, I mean any of those.
Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, anyone that has teams can book us. So if you have a group of teens, you can book us, and they can go online at imnotthemedia.org and book us to come out and do a workshop.
Can you say that a little bit slower so people know, because it sounds like an excellent resource. Say it again.
Yes, it's www.imnotthemedia.org.
Okay.
And anyone
and
can go online.
And how far do you travel? Is it just in?
We have traveled out of state. We have been to, we've been all the way, we're in Charlotte, we've been to Georgia, we've been to South Carolina, we've been even up to the D.C. area. So we travel as well. There may be expense required to accommodate us to come out and do workshops outside of the state, but we do travel to deliver our workshops and our curriculum and spread the information and the knowledge of I'm Not the Media. So,
and is it all run by teens, or do you have other colleagues that are academic people or what? What's the makeup?
Yes, we have other people that are in the organization that are trained program specialists that are trained in the different areas of the programs that we do. So all of the individuals, a lot of the staff is made up of college students that intern and learn how to deliver and facilitate programs, and they're just passionate about the message of what I'm Not the Media is about, and going out and doing these workshops with teens and other college students to just empower them to be more conscious. That's the kicker. That's the kicker there. We want, because one of the things that someone brought up, and we kind of use it as our motto, is that the media tells us what to think instead of how to think. So, you know, we want people to become conscious to what they're seeing depicted in the media. The media can show you this is what a relationship should look like, but it's not telling you how to find or how to think about what a relationship should look like. The media will tell you this is what beauty looks like instead of why is this beautiful. So we want teens and we want young adults to become conscious and critical decision makers so they can make their own decisions and to be conscious to the messages that the media is sending them.
Yeah, very interesting. Melissa, do you work with the parents in this process too, or is it strictly work with the teens?
No, I think that it's really important that we talk to parents about not only how to talk to their children about if they are experiencing abuse, but also how to start the conversation early about healthy relationships and really get their children to understand that it's really important to have respect in your relationship and to really make sure that you're having a relationship where everyone is benefiting. And I think that's really important. And so we do a lot of outreach to parents as well. And it's definitely an area we'd like to do more of as well.
But how do you get parents, how do you get their teen children to listen to parents? Or are they more receptive to an audience such as Janika or yourself versus, I'm not going to listen to what mom and dad say?
Yeah, I think that it's hard because sometimes we do get that kind of, well, I don't, especially from parents, we hear, well, my teen's not going to want to hear it from me. They'd rather hear it from you. So we do get that sometimes. But I think that what we really try to talk to parents about is how to approach the conversation so that it's not like you're doing this bad thing. Instead, it's like, let's have a conversation about why I think this is important, that you have healthy relationships and, really start the conversation in a way that's respectful and that's equal so that it's not, so that young people feel like they can talk to their parents about it.
Mm-hmm. And have you, since it became a law, right, in terms of observing it as an awareness month, what have you seen for positive outcomes each year as a result of doing XYZ activities? What can you report on?
Yeah, I think that what we know is that when people talk about this issue and when they are open to hearing about it, that they have a lot to say, and that they really want to know about this. Just young people and parents alike, that they really, once they start realizing, oh, this is important, then they really start thinking about how they can interact and improve their daily lives with this. And I think that one of the things we really talk about with young people is, you know, we want to make sure that you know how to help your friend if they're going through this, because we know that, like you said, they may not go to their parents, they may go to their friend. And so we talk a lot about that, and I think that we really see that young people are responding to that and that are interested. I know just in terms of awareness numbers, last year with our Wear Orange Day, we reached 10,000 people across the nation. And so this year we're really hoping to greatly increase that number and just help raise awareness, because I think that this is an issue that's not really talked about. We hear about domestic violence a lot, and right. Even that's not talked about enough, but we just don't really hear about this being an issue with teens, and the numbers show that it really is an issue with teens. And so I think that it's really important that we start having these conversations and that we get people talking about this, and when we do, they really respond well.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it a goal, or is it already ongoing that you've approached the State Board of Education and have some of these things become part of curriculum?
Yeah, that's definitely a goal. I know that in North Carolina there was some legislation talking about really having curriculum around this, and so a lot of the schools are really trying to increase the amount of education that they have on this, but they often, you know, when there's mandates like that, it's hard to really see on the individual level because they may not know where to go to get the information, the individual teachers and things like that. So that's one of the things that we're really trying to help with, is get the curriculum out there so that people know what information to share.
Mm-hmm. And Juliana, you know, you now, how old is your son at this point?
He's 1.5.
1.5. Okay. Now, in terms, are you a stay-at-home mom, or have you gone back to school, or what's the situation with you at this point in time?
I'm actually working on my master's in social work, and I graduated in May.
Wow. That's excellent.
Yeah.
Really? Okay, because I was just wondering if, you know, having to deal with the daycare situation and, you know, all in financially and everything, if that deterred you from your goals, and it sounds like you haven't. How did that come to be? After you left your boyfriend, right? You didn't marry him, correct?
No, I never married him.
Okay. So how have you gotten from that point where you left, and here you are, you know, a year and a half later, or maybe more, and now you're well on your way to your master's degree in social work? How did that unfold?
Well, even though I was going through so much, I never let it affect my education or my work. Right now, I'm working on my master's degree, and I work full-time also. And I know my education is going to take me to where I need to be able to work with others and help other people. So I didn't let this situation impact me at all. And in social work, I chose social work as a field because it's a helping field, and I love helping people. And
mm-hmm.
And I think this is the right path for me. As far as career-wise, choosing
mm-hmm.
social work.
So what would you like to do with the social work degree once you get it?
With my social work degree, I'm thinking about working in child protective services
mm-hmm.
or working in a hospital setting.
Okay, that's wonderful. Well, we commend you for that. You must have, you know, some very supportive friends and family, because I know, you know, it's hard with a 1.5-year-old to juggle all of your responsibilities. That's very, very good. Delilah, did you have some particular questions at this juncture in terms of some of the things we've talked about?
I think they're doing a wonderful job of covering everything I had a question about. But, you know, there again, going back not just to her story, but how often, maybe Melissa can answer this or maybe one of the other girls, how often do you see charges being filed in situations like this, especially with teens? I know that they're underage, so I'm sure that the court system handles this kind of a case a little differently. Can you explain for the listeners what would be the process, what are the advantages and disadvantages of taking your case forward through the court system?
Yeah, I think that we know, you know, not just in terms of the courts, but in terms of reporting that that this is a very dark crime and that we really don't see it being reported, and we see a lot less people going through with the criminal justice system for various reasons. A lot of it has to do with shame and fear in that sense of being controlled in that relationship. But I think that, you know, everybody has to see for themselves whether going through the criminal justice system is makes the most sense for them. And I think, you know, a lot of times we see that it can have a really great impact, but in other cases it sometimes can make the situation more dangerous. And so I think that everybody really kind of makes that decision, hopefully with help of, you know, someone who's helping them safety plan and that sort of thing to figure out what's going to be best in their situation. And I think that, you know, going through the process for teens, like you said, is definitely harder. I know that in North Carolina, particularly for teens who are in same-sex relationships, which we know that they also experience abuse at a very similar rate of the 1 in 3 teens. And so they actually can't, you know, get a restraining order or go through the system here in North Carolina, and that depends on the state, obviously. But that's been a really big issue here. And so that can make it, you know, really hard or impossible to do so. And, you know, going through the criminal justice system, sometimes you have to have, you know, different sorts of evidence and proof. And sometimes we see that it's hard to do that with young people when a lot of it is taking place, you know, online and in social media. And sometimes they can get those records and they're used. And sometimes that's a little harder to use to show those sorts of things.
So can you in North Carolina, if you are a same-sex couple, you do not you're not afforded the same protections as heterosexual couples. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. Yeah.
Oh, that's bad. Is someone trying to do something about that legislatively?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really big issue that's been brought up time and again through policy and trying to make those changes. And in different states, it's been, you know, had different states have had more success than others in getting equal protection.
Right. Well, the South tends to be a lot more homophobic, I think. Delilah, are you aware? Is it the same in South Carolina when it comes to that? Do you know?
I don't know, Donna. I don't know what the laws are concerning that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I can look it up. But so there, would you say, would this be a good guesstimate, Melissa? Like, maybe it turns out to be 50-50 in terms of those that choose the path to go through the court system and those that do not?
I would say it's actually less than that. In terms of reporting, we know that of the 1 in 3 teens that experience abuse, only one-third of those 1 in 3 are actually reporting it to anyone. So if they're reporting it to anyone, then that's even less that are going through the court system. So it's a very small number of people that have the ability to go through. I think it has a lot to do with, you know, access to resources. It has a lot to do with knowledge of the resources, and it also has a lot to do with making that decision about what's the safest and what's the easiest. And a lot of times young people don't want to get their parents involved, and so that can be a challenge with going through the criminal justice system as well.
Right. Now, if they choose not to go through the courts, what is it that, and you're talking about setting up a safety plan for them, do you automatically make a referral to a a shelter. You make a tailored safety plan for them. You refer them to the Department of Children and Family. What is it that you do for them if they choose not to go with the courts?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that they can make a safety plan in a few different ways. They can go locally to local crisis agencies, or a lot of shelters often won't accept underage people unless they're with an adult, so like unless they're a child of an adult who's in the shelter. A lot of times they can't get into shelters. But in terms of other agencies like domestic violence or sexual assault agencies often are good places. And like I said earlier, nationally they can contact loveisrespect.org. That's run by trained advocates who are actually also young people. And so that way they're contacting someone who they may feel more comfortable with. And they can contact them by chatting with them online at loveisrespect.org, mm-hmm. calling the hotline at 1-866-331-9474. Mm-hmm. or texting right. Love Is to 22522. So I think that's a really great resource as well that they can, you know, and it gives them multiple options of how to do that, because we know that young people don't always want to pick up the phone and call a hotline.
Right. And I know that there's a lot of countrified areas, for lack of a better term, in your state. I mean, there are cosmopolitan places, too, in terms of, you know, your larger cities, you know, like Charlotte, Wilmington, some others. But say, you know, and I don't mean to stereotype, but a lot of this activity does go on in small towns where there aren't resources, and maybe some people that have don't have the opportunity for as much education, and they, you know, they get into these kinds of relationships and engage in these behaviors that are very unhealthy. Does there seem to be more that of this behavior that goes on in particular kinds of geographic areas or not, or it's the same across the board, or what do you have to say about that?
I'd say a lot of the studies have shown that it's pretty similar rates across the board in terms of geographical location, socioeconomic status, race, all of those different factors, that we find that it's pretty even across the board. I know that here in North Carolina, some of the state coalitions have really made more of an effort to reach out to rural areas because, like you said, they don't always have as easy access to those resources as some other larger cities like here in Charlotte.
Yeah. Jamaica, there is a film that's coming up that you're going to be sponsoring. Isn't that true?
Yes. Well, not me, but more so the library at Imagine On, and I also work
there.
Okay,
tell us about that.
I work there as a teen service specialist, and I'm helping spearhead the filming there with Michelle and the rest of the committee members in Charlotte for Reviving Ophelia. We were showing this movie in our theater, the Wells Fargo, not Wachovia anymore, the Wells Fargo Playhouse at Imagine on Sunday, February the 16th. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
Sunday is the 16th.
Okay. I have so many dates in my head right now. February 16th from 2 to 4. There will be the film will be shown. We'll be serving popcorn, and then there will be a discussion following it. And discussion will be open for – there's a discussion open for parents and a separate discussion open for teens, just to have that more private dialogue with other adults. So the parents will be separated from the teens when the discussion takes the floor following the movie. But we also are going to have resource tables out at Imagine On for information for parents and families that are coming to the film, as well as a poster exhibit contest for teen groups that are getting involved in Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month. They can put together a poster exhibit, and we're actually giving away a prize to the best poster exhibit at the event. So it's going to be a great event.
Is it happening simultaneously in other cities across the country? They're all showing this film?
No.
Go ahead.
was going to say, Melissa? As far as I know, it's just here in Charlotte. It's a Lifetime movie, so it's available nationally. And if you go on Lifetime's website, you can find out when it's showing on.
It's about a year old, you said, and tell us the name of it, and maybe people can do a preview on YouTube as well.
Yes, there's a trailer on YouTube. It's called Reviving Ophelia. It's a Lifetime movie, and it actually came out in 2010. I checked after we had that discussion.
Okay.
That's a great movie.
It is. Now, have you seen it, Juliana?
I did. I actually watched it when it first came out, and it impacted me, and at that point, that's when I had, like, a breakup with him, because it kind of empowered me, but, you know,
is that
the cycle.
Right? So the movie had made a contribution in terms of you're deciding to make the break, is that right?
Yes, it did. But at that time, I didn't have support, so as the cycle, like I was explaining the cycle earlier, I just ended up going back with him, but the movie was great.
Well, for those of us, I know I've heard of it, and I don't think I've seen it. Is it the account of another person's personal story, or is it more than that?
Yeah, it's definitely being that it's somebody's story, and the fact that she was a teen also.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. It's easier for someone, I guess, at a young age to relate to, like, oh, wow, she's going through this. And at the end, she was able to get out.
Right. Well, if it was that impactful to you, I would imagine if you have a whole theater filled with teens, they may have the same feeling. Now, Jamaica, with all of the exhibit tables that you're having and everything, are there going to be counselors there in case this is the impetus for them to say, hey, I need help with my relationship? Are you going to have resources available there?
I'm so sorry. I think we do have different organizations that will be able to be there and provide that resource for them, as well as information for them to hand out to them to say, hey, if this is your situation, these are phone numbers and hotlines that you can call and get the help that you need at any moment, at any time. If you don't feel as confident to go up in public at this event and say, hey, I need help after leaving this event, here's a resource, here's a number, here's a contact that you can call to get the help you need.
Well, that's good, and maybe you can give us some contact information. We can put it in our blog. But Melissa, when you're not doing your youth advisory board role and you work for the commission in Charlotte, what is it that you do in the other months as the information and education coordinator there? Are you dealing with other topics, or is this your year-round role?
Yeah, I'm actually under a grant that focuses on teen dating violence among the LGBTQ community, and so we're going to be doing a lot of work with that over the next – it's a three-year grant. We're going to be doing a lot of work with that over the next 3 years in Mecklenburg County in the Charlotte area in North Carolina. So that's a really big thing that I'll be working on. And I think that one of the things that I really think is important is that as great as it is to bring such awareness during February, we also want to make sure that this is an issue that's happening year-round, so we want to be talking about it year-round. So we make sure that we get the word out.
Yes, definitely. So we've got about like a minute and a half or so. What would be a parting message that you would like to impart to our audience before we have to sign off? Anything in particular? Go ahead.
I would just say I think that, we really want to start talking about this issue and really raise awareness, and we hope that everybody will help us do that, whether it's by wearing orange on the 11th or helping us spread awareness through the announcement on the 14th or just talking to the young people in your lives about this issue. I think that no matter what day of the year it is, we really want to make sure that this conversation is being started and continued.
Yes, and we will do what we can to promote. Like I say, we're going to have this in the archives, in our blog, and we will circulate it on social media. We will be in touch because we may be doing some other projects with you and your director. And we'd like to talk to you, Jamaica, and Juliana also on some other things, okay? So I just say thank you so much, all three of you. It's been such a pleasure. The hour has flown by. Delilah, they gave us a wealth of information, and I think they're three wonderful examples, aren't they, of people in North Carolina that are really paying it forward, right?
Oh, yeah. It's been a very good hour, and I know that our listeners should have all the tools in their toolbox.
Yeah, hopefully. And I'm sure if they're calling from another state, perhaps Melissa could direct them as well. So we will sign off for this evening. And everyone, please come back on Monday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. when we have our two-hour special. But I say thank you again to Juliana, Melissa, and Jamaica. And
thank you.
Good evening,
yep.
Everyone. And
thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you so much, and give me a call back. And we'll see you next Saturday for another edition of Shattered Lives as well. And stay tuned for the blog tomorrow. Good night, everyone. Thank you, Delilah.